The Five Chinnas. The Five Buddha Mandala. Shakyamuni, the historical Buddha, made an important distinction when speaking about the nature of a Buddha. There was the Rupakaya, or form body, and the Dharmakaya, the body of truth. The Rupakaya alludes to the historical embodiment of the Buddha that exists under the conditions of space and time. The Dharmakaya to the principle of Buddhahood that persists beyond space and time. In Shakyamuni's time, this idea received little elaboration. After all, both these ideas found full expression in his own person. He was an enlightened individual, living within human historical time, and he stood for and expounded the principle of enlightenment. But in the years after his death, the distinction between these two bodies became increasingly meaningful. There might not be a human Buddha such as Shakyamuni present in the world today, but the principle of enlightenment is always with us. There is, however, a gap between the way in which we conceive of a human Buddha and the principle of Buddhahood. The former is much more immediate, and especially if one has the rare good fortune to meet such a being, to some extent apprehensible. The principle of Buddhahood, however, can be a rather distant, dry, perhaps even over-conceptual idea. In the course of time, Buddhist aspirants strove to bridge the gap between these two ideas, seeking to apprehend the immense, mysterious nature of Buddhahood. They reached out towards it, not only with their intellect, but also with their emotions and imagination. And gradually another set of forms appeared. These are the ideal or archetypal Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, beings made entirely of pure light, who manifest at the very highest reaches of the imagination, and who represent the interplay between the human imagination and the principle of enlightenment itself. Eventually, these developments crystallized into the Trikaya doctrine, the doctrine of the three bodies of the Buddha. These three bodies are the Nimanakaya, or created body, the Buddha who appears under the conditions of historical time, the Sambhogakaya, or body of mutual enjoyment, the ideal Buddhas, and the Dharmakaya, the body of truth, the universal principle of Buddhahood. Later Mahayana and Vajrayana Buddhism tended to focus their attention on the Sambhogakaya. Shakyamuni, the human historical Buddha, the Nimanakaya, had long departed this world. Enlightenment in its purest form, the Dharmakaya, was an ungraspable, abstract and almost vague concept. But the Sambhogakaya, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas of the imagination, had a numinous spiritual presence that devotees could relate to and work with. Thus in the Mahayana Sutras, the Buddha, although he often goes under the name of Shakyamuni, is clearly a trans-historical, archetypal figure. And in those sutras too, we begin to meet other Buddhas, many of them from eras and world systems entirely different from our own. These developments eventually came to be formalized iconographically. To begin with, Buddhahood began to be conceived of in terms of its two principal attributes, wisdom and compassion. And the archetypal Buddha appeared flanked by two other Buddha figures, Amitabha, who represents infinite love, and Akshobhya, who stands for wisdom. Other figures gradually emerged, and in time the five Buddha mandala appeared, five Buddha figures who between them embody the five essential characteristics of enlightenment. Once begun, this process of development is potentially endless, for enlightenment has an infinite range of qualities, and enlightened beings strive to relate to the unenlightened using an infinite variety of means. But, for the Tantra at least, the Five Buddha Mandala is the central organizing matrix for its subsequent development. Each Buddha in the mandala came to be conceived of as the head of a particular Buddha family, comprising a whole range of other figures, bodhisattvas, protectors, dharkas and dharkinis. Each of the Buddhas in the mandala, and therefore each of their families, had its own unique qualities, colours, directions, emblems, times of day, animals, gestures, seed syllables, mantras, skandhas, elements, pure lands, realms, magical functions, and so on. The Five Buddha Mandala, therefore, is the key to the vast treasury of spiritual imagination, which is Vajrayana Buddhism. By beginning to apprehend the mysterious qualities of each of the five Buddhas, we begin to enter the world of the Vajrayana Buddhist imagination. Following the path of the sun, we shall now enter the mandala in the east, proceed to the south, the west, and the north, and finish in the centre. Akshobhya. Akshobhya sits on a vast blue lotus throne, supported by four massive elephants. His body is made of deep blue light. He has dark blue-black hair gathered into a topknot, and he wears the flowing, richly ornamented robes of an archetypal Buddha. Seated in full lotus posture, his whole body radiates light and imperturbable calm. His left hand rests in his lap, a golden vajra upright on his palm. His right hand, palm downwards, is lowered and his fingers just touch the white moon mat on which he sits. This earth-touching gesture communicates his unshakable confidence. It stands for that ineffable transcendental rootedness that is the paradoxical core of his nature, for he is rooted in shunyata, emptiness. So deeply rooted is he, in fact, that nothing can ever shake his composure. In his heart, the syllable hum glows with a pale blue light, and his mantra resounds like the slow beat of a huge drum. Om Vajra Akshobhya Hum. Akshobhya's mythical history is recounted in the Akshobhya Vyuha Sutra. Aeons ago, in the land of Abhirati, intense delight, there lived a Buddha called Vishalaksha. One day a monk came to him wanting to vow to gain enlightenment for the sake of all beings. The Buddha warned him that his task would be immense, as he would have to give up all feelings of anger. Undaunted, the monk took a series of great vows, never to give way to anger or to bear malice, never to engage in unethical conduct, and many others. Over succeeding ages, he was unshakable, Akshobhya, in holding to these vows, and as a result became a Buddha, and created a pure land known as Abhirati. Abhirati is situated at an unthinkable distance to the east of our own world. There, palm trees and jasmine, wafted by gentle breezes, give off heavenly sounds, surpassing all known music. Food and drink are abundant, and all the inhabitants live joyfully, delighting only in the Dharma. Whoever is reborn there attains the state of non-regression. For them, Buddhahood is assured. Akshobhya is the head of the Vajra family. The Vajra, the diamond thunderbolt, is an emblem of sovereignty. In the ancient Indian tradition, it is borne by Indra, king of the gods. But in the Buddhist tradition, it became far more than that. Indra's thunderbolt, like that of Zeus, is irresistible. It has all the immutable qualities of the diamond. In Buddhism, this is the quality of the truth, or transcendental reality. The mundane world is mutable, subject to change. The transcendental is immutable and unchanging. The Vajra represents the unyielding nature of reality and the wisdom that perceives it. The Vajra family contains many illustrious members. Foremost among these are Vajrasattva and the family protector Vajrapani. Akshobhya's mudra, or gesture of touching the earth, recalls a legendary incident in the life of the Buddha Shakyamuni. He was meditating on the very verge of enlightenment under the Bodhi tree, we are told, when Mara, the evil one, saw what was about to happen and used all the weapons in his armoury to launch an assault on the sage. His demonic army caused boulders, arrows and spears to rain down on the Buddha-to-be, but when these encountered the peace-filled aura of his concentration, they turned to flowers and fell as offerings at his feet. Mara then sent his daughters to seduce the Buddha, but he never even looked at them. Eventually, near to despair, Mara tried his last and most subtle trick. He approached the Buddha-to-be and said, "You are sitting on the Vajrasana, the very axis of the world. Upon this spot all the Buddhas of old gained their enlightenment. By what right do you dare to sit upon it?" Siddhartha replied, "I have practiced generosity, ethics, and the other perfections for aeons. I have earned my right to be here." "Ha! You may say that, but who is your witness?" Mara responded. If his armies couldn't dislodge the Buddha to be, if his daughters could not distract him, perhaps self-doubt might put an end to his quest. Siddhartha, however, was emphatic. He said nothing, but just touched the earth with his fingertips of his right hand. In response, the earth goddess, Vasundhara, arose out of the ground. "I will be his witness," she said. "For aeons I have seen him purifying himself through his spiritual practices." And Mara was discomfited. This gesture of touching the earth represents complete rootedness and total assurance. It represents the unshakable confidence of the ethically upright. Akshobhya embodies the mirror-like wisdom. Like a mirror, this wisdom reflects impartially whatever is presented to it. It makes no judgments, never qualifies nor distorts, but simply reflects with complete truthfulness. Like the mirror, the mind, imbued with wisdom, reflects but is unaffected by what is presented to it. Like a still lake, nothing ruffles its composure. Ratnasambhava. Ratnasambhava, the jewel-born one, or producer of jewels, sits on a yellow lotus throne, supported by four beautiful horses. He is made entirely of golden yellow light. His left hand, which rests in his lap, holds a magnificent jewel, the wish-fulfilling gem, symbol of the bodhicitta, while his right rests on his right knee, palm outwards, in the gesture of supreme giving. Golden light radiates from his body, illuminating his pure land, the glorious, which resounds with the sound of his mantra, "Om Ratnasambhava Trung." Ratnasambhava embodies the wisdom of equality, which sees every aspect of life in all its myriad forms as equally marked by emptiness. Everything is equally devoid of inherent existence, and all beings whatsoever are equally worthy of love and compassion. All are equally precious, and all are worthy of every gift. The wisdom of equality is a great antidote to pride. The misplaced view that we are, in certain respects at least, somehow special and more worthy than others. Ratnasambhava is the Buddha of abundance and generosity. He is associated with wealth and riches, and from his own vast abundance he gives freely to all. Among his retinue in the Ratna or jewel family is Ratnapani, the family protector, as well as Jambala, the bodhisattva of wealth. Jambala is a large, portly figure, somewhat like a rich merchant from ancient India. In his left hand he cradles a mongoose, which he squeezes gently. As he does so, jewels pour from the animal's mouth. In the East, Jambala is regarded as a kind of god of wealth, and people propitiate him for the sake of material gain. But Jambala is a bodhisattva, and it's unlikely that he would help anyone gain anything that did not help them to develop selflessness. Ratnasambhava has everything in abundance because he actually owns nothing. In giving up the idea of ownership, which separates off mine from yours, one inherits everything. Beauty, nature, the feel of the breeze, the colour of flowers, the sonnets of Shakespeare, and the treasury of the Dharma. These are not owned by anyone and belong to all who approach them with appreciation. For that reason, Ratnasambhava is also associated with the arts and culture. He is the supreme patron of aesthetic appreciation and is particularly allied with the human realm. The appreciation of art and culture is one of the factors that separate the human realm from that of the animals, the hells, the praetors, and the asuras. The faculty of aesthetic appreciation is a major constituent of our humanity. The wish-fulfilling gem that Ratnasambhava holds in his palm is the key to all riches. Being unenlightened, we all, to some extent, cherish the vain hope that somehow or other great wealth or more access to mundane goods of one sort or another can put an end for a while to our experience of unsatisfactoriness. The bodhicitta represents the complete transformation of that inane desire. When the bodhicitta arises, our desire to bolster our ego identity through the appropriation of the empty symbols of success, or by surrounding it with transient comforts, gives way to the deeply fulfilling desire to help all beings in whatever way. Our aching need to take from the world in order to fill our inner emptiness changes into the desire to give to others from our inner wealth and abundance. The wish-fulfilling gem represents the desire to share everything with all. Seeing that, ultimately, the very notion of ownership is utterly empty, the bodhisattva shares everything and tries always to help others to enter the world of ownerless aesthetic appreciation, where the beauty of this world is available equally to all. Amitabha. The Buddha Amitabha sits in full lotus posture on a red lotus throne, supported by four glorious peacocks. His body is a warm glowing red, the colour of rubies or the setting sun. His hands are in a gesture of meditation, resting one upon the other, thumbs lightly touching. He wears richly embroidered robes. Around his head flickers an aura of green light. Another of red surrounds his body. Both are edged with rainbows. His resounding mantra, Om Amideva Hri, spreads love and warmth throughout the universe. As head of the lotus family, Amitabha is associated with the qualities of the lotus, openness, receptivity, and spiritual growth, and he reaches out to the world of the praters or hungry ghosts, giving them unconditional love, helping them to overcome their narrow and neurotic preoccupations and open themselves up instead to all that lives. Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion, is the protector of the lotus family, which contains some of the most famous figures in the Buddhist pantheon: White Tara, Hayagriva, Padmasambhava, and Shakyamuni. Amitabha is the most popular of all the jinnas, perhaps because the unconditional love he manifests towards all beings is what we most desire. He appears in many sutras and plays a central part in the three Pure Land Sutras: the larger Sukhavati Vyuha Sutra, the smaller Sukhavati Vyuha Sutra, and the Amitaya Dhyana Sutra. In the first of these, we hear about a young man called Dharmakara, who lived many aeons ago. One day he approached the Buddha of that era, Lokeshvara Raja, and made a series of 48 great vows. All these vows had as their subject Dharmakara's intention to benefit living beings, and the 18th vow has come to be seen as especially important. Quote, "If, O Lord, after I have once attained enlightenment, beings in the immeasurable, numberless Buddha fields, through hearing my name, should direct their thought to rebirth in my Buddha field, and should thus bring the root of karmic merit to ripeness, if they should not be reborn in my Buddha field, even if they had directed their thought only 10 times towards me and my Buddha paradise, may I then not reach supreme perfect enlightenment." End quote. In making this vow, Dharmakara made it a condition of his attaining enlightenment that he would create a pure land in which everyone who had been even slightly devoted to him should be reborn. In the same sutra, the Buddha tells Ananda that Dharmakara later became the Buddha Amitabha. Since Dharmakara did become a Buddha, it follows that he must have fulfilled his vow and have created his pure land, Sukhavati, the land of bliss. The Pure Land schools of Buddhism maintain that there is no need to engage in arduous Dharma practice. According to some, all the efforts we make to attain enlightenment only strengthen our own ego-based clinging. Instead, we should manifest great faith. We should just accept that through the great efforts of the Buddha Amitabha, we will be reborn in Sukhavati. All we need to do is call on him and recite with gratitude his praises. Om Namo Amitabhaya Buddhaya, or in Japanese, Namo Amida Butsu, homage to the Buddha Amitabha. If only we do that for a little time, we will be reborn in Sukhavati. There, a vast plain of lapis lazuli, intersected by cords of gold, stretches away in all directions. The land is covered with forests of jewel trees that grant every wish. In these trees sit colourful birds, singing the songs of impermanence and insubstantiality. Great rivers, bearing jewel flowers in their currents, murmur the sound of the Dharma. Gentle winds cause rains of flowers to fall from the sky, and everything one could desire appears immediately upon being wished for. In all directions there are vast lotus flowers, upon which sit golden Buddhas teaching the Dharma. And in the middle of this vast radiant scene sits the Buddha Amitabha, flanked by his two chief disciples, Avalokiteshvara and Mahasthamaprapta. In this world, conditions for Dharma practice are ideal. Those born here make continuous spiritual progress until they attain enlightenment. When he was still a freelance wanderer, it was an unusual vision of the Buddha Amitabha that convinced Sangharakshita that his spiritual apprenticeship was over and that it was time for him to seek formal Buddhist ordination. He and a friend were staying in Virupaksha Cave on the slope of Mount Arunachala, the sacred hill of light that rose behind Ramana Maharshi's ashram in South India. There they devoted themselves to meditation. Amitabha is sometimes thought of as the Buddha of meditation, and one night he appeared to the young Sangharakshita. Quote, "I found myself, as it were, out of the body and in the presence of Amitabha, the Buddha of infinite light, who presides over the western quarter of the universe. The colour of the Buddha was a deep, rich, luminous red, like that of rubies, though at the same time soft and glowing, like the light of the setting sun. While his left hand rested on his lap, the fingers of his right hand held up by the stalk a single red lotus in full bloom, and he sat in the usual cross-legged posture on an enormous red lotus that floated on the surface of the sea. To the left, immediately behind the raised right arm of the Buddha, was the red hemisphere of the setting sun, its reflection glittering golden across the waters. How long the experience lasted, I do not know, for I seem to be out of time as well as out of the body. But I saw the Buddha as clearly as I had ever seen anything under the ordinary circumstances of my life. Indeed, far more clearly and vividly. The rich red colour of Amitabha himself, as well as of the two lotuses and the setting sun, made a particularly deep impression on me. It was more wonderful, more appealing than any earthly red. It was like red light, but so soft and at the same time so vivid as to be altogether without parallel." Amitabha is associated above all with the qualities of boundless love and compassion. The poison with which he is associated is passion, and the peacocks who support his throne live on snakes, whose venom they transmute into the glorious colours in their plumes. In the same way, by the power of love, Amitabha transforms the venom of passion into discriminating wisdom, which sees the unique, utterly distinctive characteristics of every passing phenomenon. Although marked with emptiness, no two events are ever completely alike. In the endless flux of conditions, every fleeting condition is unique. Out of his boundless love, Amitabha appreciates the complete significance of every minute event. Amoghasiddhi. Amoghasiddhi, infallible success, is the Buddha of the dark, mysterious northern sky. His deep green lotus throne is supported by two pairs of Shangshang birds, mythical beasts whose heads, arms and torsos are human and who have the wings, feet, talons and tails of eagles. In their hands, they each hold an enormous pair of cymbals which they clash as they fly. Dark green in colour and clad in scarlet robes, his right arm is raised, palm outwards, in the gesture which bestows complete fearlessness, while his left hand, resting in his lap, supports a double vajra. His mantra, Om Amoghasiddhi Ahung, resounds throughout the universe, bestowing courage and the will to act wherever it is heard. The double vajra, according to Indian Buddhist cosmology, is the ground upon which the entire universe stands. Inconceivably vast, this giant symbol of total integration is the foundation on which all change and transformation takes place. As the aeons unfold, universes come and go, radiating out from and collapsing back into the primal store of energy, a double vajra, within which all opposites are united and all levels of existence enfolded. This symbolism of unification continues in the image of the Shangshang birds, also known as Garudas. Amoghasiddhi is the lord of the great transformation, the two-way transformation in which the spiritual takes bodily form and the embodied human becomes a Buddha. Garudas can be seen as part animal, part human, and part divine, ascending ever upwards towards new dimensions of consciousness. As Amoghasiddhi's consort, Green Tara is the most famous member of the Action family. She was, as it were, born into the Lotus family, so she is a member of both families. The Bodhisattva Vishvapani, holder of all, is the Action family protector, and Maitreya, the Buddha-to-be, is also associated with this family. Amoghasiddhi is imbued with the all-accomplishing wisdom. The enlightened mind spontaneously devotes itself to the welfare of all living beings. In doing so, it devises many ways of helping people. The enlightened mind helps living beings naturally and spontaneously. Buddhas and bodhisattvas do not need to sit down and think, how can I go and help people today? Is this person more in need of help or that? Maybe I'll go and help so-and-so. The enlightened mind functions freely, spontaneously and naturally. Helpfulness pours forth in a spontaneous flood. The all-accomplishing wisdom transmutes the poison of envy. Envy is one of the main emotions in the Asura world, which is in Amoghasiddhi's special care. The Asuras worship success, so from time to time they are able to hear Amoghasiddhi's mantra. He shows them the way to the infallible success they so deeply desire. Envy comes from the thwarted wish to succeed. Amoghasiddhi teaches us to look within and find the resources our desire for success demands. Through the profound introspection of meditation, we come in time to perceive the ultimate emptiness of all phenomena. When we see this, we see that all apparent obstacles are empty too. With that insight, we become unstoppable. Envy turns into unstoppability. In the Bardo Thodol, known in the West as the Tibetan Book of the Dead, we read how all the different chinnas and their families appear on successive days to the newly deceased in the Bardo, the state intermediate between death and the next rebirth. If we're receptive to them, they can lead us to more fortuitous rebirths. This is how Amoghasiddhi appears in the Bardo. Quote, O son of noble family, listen without distraction. On the fifth day, a green light, the purified element of air, will shine, and at the same time, blessed Amoghasiddhi, Lord of the Circle, will appear before you from the green northern realm, accumulated actions. His body is green in colour. He holds a double vajra in his hand, and he sits on a throne of Shangshang birds soaring in the sky, embracing his consort, Samayatara. He is accompanied by the two male bodhisattvas, Vajrapani and Sarva Nirvana Viskambin, and the two female bodhisattvas, Gandhar and Naivedya, so that six Buddha forms appear out of the space of rainbow light. The green light of the skanda of concept in its basic purity, the action accomplishing wisdom, brilliant green, luminous and clear, sharp and terrifying, adorned with discs of light, will come from the heart of Amoghasiddhi and his consort and pierce your heart so that your eyes cannot bear to look at it. Do not be afraid of it. It is the spontaneous play of your own mind. So rest in the supreme state, free from activity and care, in which there is no near or far, love or hate. At the same time, together with the wisdom light, the soft red light of the jealous gods caused by envy will also shine on you. Meditate so that there is no difference between love and hate. But if your intelligence is weak, then simply do not take pleasure in it. At that time, under the influence of intense envy, you will be terrified and escape from the sharp, brilliant green light. But you will feel pleasure and attraction towards the soft red light of the jealous gods. At that moment, do not be afraid of the green light, sharp and brilliant, luminous and clear, but recognize it as wisdom. Let your mind rest in it, relaxed, in a state of non-action, and supplicate it with devotion, thinking, it is the light ray of blessed Amoghasiddhi's compassion. I take refuge in it. It is the light ray hook of blessed Amoghasiddhi's compassion, called the action accomplishing wisdom. So long for it and do not escape. Even if you escape, it will stay with you inseparably. Do not be afraid of it. Do not be attracted to the soft red light of the jealous gods. That is the inviting path of karma accumulated by your intense envy. If you are attracted to it, you will fall into the realm of the jealous gods and experience unbearable misery from fighting and quarrelling. It is an obstacle blocking the path of liberation, so do not be attracted to it, but give up your unconscious tendencies. Feel longing for the luminous, brilliant green light and say this inspiration prayer with intense one-pointed concentration on blessed Amoghasiddhi and his consort. When, through intense envy, I wander in samsara on the luminous light path of action accomplishing wisdom, may blessed Amoghasiddhi go before me, his consort Samayatara behind me. Help me to cross the Bardo's dangerous pathway and bring me to the perfect Buddha state. By saying this inspiration prayer with deep devotion, you will dissolve into rainbow light in the heart of blessed Amoghasiddhi and his consort and become a Sambhogakaya Buddha in the northern realm, perfected actions. End quote. Virochana inhabits the centre of the mandala. His white lotus throne is supported by four golden lions, and he sits on a white moon mat, himself brilliant white in colour, blazing like sunshine on snow. He has black hair and wears white robes, deeply embroidered with white thread. His hands held in front of his heart make the finely balanced gesture of teaching the Dharma, His mantra, Om Varochana Hum, illuminates the whole universe with the light of the truth. His emblem is the Dharma Chakra, the golden eight-spoked wheel of the Dharma. In ancient Indian mythology, the golden wheel was associated with sovereignty. The Chakravarti Raja, or wheel-turning king, was a monarch who ruled in accordance with the Dharma, using his position to influence society for the good. The emperor Ashoka is widely regarded as having been a Chakravarti Raja, as was King Trisondetsen in Tibet. The association of kingship and the wheel comes from an ancient Indian tradition, in which the boundaries of a kingdom were established by setting loose a horse with a wheel on its back. Wherever the horse went unchallenged, the king's rule held sway. The Buddha's dominion is the area where his wheel, the Dharma Chakra, goes unchallenged. This is where the Dharma holds sway, and since the principles of the Dharma are true everywhere, the Buddha's domain includes all of time and space. Varochana's dominion is therefore the entire universe. Once, the Buddha Shakyamuni accepted an invitation from his father, King Suddhodana, to visit Kapilavastu, the capital of the Shakyans. Hearing that his son had been begging in the streets and seeing him dressed in his rag robes, Suddhodana reproached him for not living up to his royal birth. "I come from the noblest lineage of all," replied the Buddha, "the lineage of the enlightened ones. My rag robes are the traditional garb of my lineage. Begging is our time-honoured custom." Varochana's golden wheel, his monarchic symbol, stands for the intrinsic nobility of a complete commitment to spiritual life. The golden wheel is also the symbol of the Dharma, the Buddha Shakyamuni's first attempt to communicate his experience of enlightenment to his former companions in asceticism is known as his first turning of the wheel of the Dharma. The Dharma Chakra Pravartana and Varochana's teaching gesture is also called the gesture of turning the wheel of the Dharma. Varochana means illuminator, and the golden wheel is clearly a solar symbol. It illuminates and nourishes all living things, bringing light and warmth where there was cold and darkness, and it is the centre about which all else revolves. In Japan, where the cult of Varochana spread, he is known as the Sun Buddha, and he is a central figure in the Shingon tradition, a form of Japanese Vajrayana. His animal, the lion, is also associated with the proclamation of the truth. In the scriptures, the Buddha's utterance is sometimes referred to as his Singhanada, or lion's roar. The lion roars in the jungle at night without fear of others. Lesser animals are afraid to make a sound lest they be pounced on by their enemies. But according to myth and legend, the lion roars to proclaim his kingship of the whole jungle. The Buddha's fearless proclamation of the Dharma, his proclamation of his sovereignty over the whole spiritual universe, is like the roaring of a lion. Varochana is head of the Tathagata, or Buddha, family, whose protector is Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom. Varochana himself embodies the wisdom of the Dharmadhatu, the sphere of truth. This is the totality of all wisdoms. Just as the white light of the sun may be fragmented by a prism into many different colours, so the sun-like wisdom of the Dharmadhatu is refracted throughout the mandala, manifesting its many different aspects. But wisdom is holographic. Ultimately, every aspect of it contains all other aspects. So although the Dharmadhatu wisdom is central, it is, like the light of the sun, all-pervasive. From Virochana's pure land, the Dharmadhatu wisdom streams out as white light, transforming the poison of ignorance. Virochana is particularly associated with the realm of the gods, who live in ignorance of the truth of impermanence. The image of the all-pervasive, interpenetrating nature of the realm of the Dharmadhatu is graphically described in the Gandavyuha Sutra, in which the pilgrim, Sudana, encounters the Bodhisattva Maitreya outside Virochana's tower. Quote, "Then Sudana respectfully circumambulated the enlightening being Maitreya and said, 'Please open the door of the tower and I will enter.' Then Maitreya went up to the door of the tower containing the adornments of Virochana and with his right hand snapped his fingers. The door of the tower opened and Maitreya bade Sudana enter. Then Sudana, in greatest wonder, went into the tower. As soon as he had entered, the door shut. He saw the tower immensely vast and wide, hundreds of thousands of leagues wide, as measureless as the sky, as vast as all of space, adorned with countless attributes, countless canopies, banners, pennants, jewels, garlands of pearls and gems, moons and half-moons, multicoloured streamers, jewel nets, gold nets, strings of jewels, jewels on golden threads, sweetly ringing bells and nets of chimes, flowers showering, celestial garlands and streamers. Also, inside the tower, he saw hundreds of thousands of other towers similarly arrayed. He saw those towers as infinitely vast as space, evenly arrayed in all directions. Yet these towers were not mixed up with one another, being each mutually distinct, while appearing mutually reflected in each and every object of all the other towers. Then Sudana, seeing this miraculous manifestation of the inconceivable realm of the great tower containing the adornments of Virochana, was flooded with joy and bliss. His mind was cleared of all conceptions and freed from all obstructions. Stripped of all delusion, he became clairvoyant without distortion and could hear all sounds with unimpeded mindfulness. He was freed from all scattering of attention, and his intellect followed the unobstructed eye of liberation. With physical tranquility, seeing all objects without hindrance, by the power of production everywhere, he bowed in all directions with his whole body. The moment he bowed, by the power of Maitreya, Sudana perceived himself in all of those towers, and in all of those towers he saw various, diverse, inconceivable, miraculous scenes." End quote. In the realm of the Dharmadhatu, we see that in reality, everything contains everything else, and everything interpenetrates everything else. The mind, suffused with wisdom, sees the ultimate translucency of all phenomena. End chapter.